Welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Interviews. Today I have a fabulous guest whose film is available on, well, I saw it on Tubi, and I live in Canada, so that means you must be able to see it everywhere. Chris Shearn is in the house. His feature-length film, Evil Lurks. Welcome.
How you doing, man?
I am great. How are you doing? How's your film doing? Let's tell me everything. No, I'm joking. I'll ask you questions, I promise. go ahead.
Oh no, yeah. I mean, it's you know, it went live back in early January. So yeah, we're just, you know, spreading the word, trying to get the word out there that is, you know, this is out there. So we're just,
yeah. I don't mean to be rude. I could not find a print review on your film. I couldn't find an interview with you guys. So hopefully, I'm first. I'm really excited.
Oh no, it's funny. Yeah, it's interesting because yeah, we've done a bunch of, you know, interviews the past couple of weeks, and then this movie's been, we've been working on this movie for 4 years, so we got past like interviews from like a year or 2 years ago and stuff like that talking about the movie. But yeah, we've been trying to stay busy with promoting the movie and whatnot.
That's awesome. Well, let's start at the beginning. You have two writers on the film and two directors. So let's break down the writing process first. How is it? So are you the main writer and the other guy helps you out? Or are you both equal? Or who starts it?
Well, to make the long story not super long, I met Aaron. We used to work together at a print shop. And he made a poster. Now, you know, the poster he made, you know, the Shish Man poster or whatever. So I was like, hey man, that's a cool poster. And I, you know, he's like, yeah, I'm a filmmaker, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm like, well, you know, I'm in the film. I mostly do sound design for like short films and stuff like that. Also, I'm a musician. So I play in a band and stuff like that. So I compose music as well. And, yeah, so like one thing led to another. He had a short film based on the character or whatever. And, one thing led to another. We just, you know, we was talking about different things, different concepts. And then I pretty much started writing ideas and then giving it to him and seeing what he thought. And then we just kind of put it all together and, wrote the script. And I think we started writing the full length in January of 2019. It took us like 3 months to write the scripts, and we started shooting the first scene in May of 2019. So, as far as, you know, I had the idea about the hypnotherapist and stuff like that. And then some of his ideas was in place, and then we just kind of went back and forth, with it. I really don't want to say who wrote the most, but you know, when it came to the hypnotherapy, that whole concept with the hypnotherapist and all that stuff.
Let me help you. If you have a good time writing it with them, that's all that matters. It doesn't matter who wrote what. You guys had a good time. That's all that matters.
You want me to be honest? This was a fun, stressful, fun experience doing it.
It sounds like positivity to me. It's like doing interviews, man. It's the same thing. Now, you have two directors. Now, you and obviously the other guy share directing. Now I see it's a little bit more of a problem, right? Because you're both on set. Do you guys decide who's shooting what scene, or it just sort of naturally happens?
Well, since you know, I had to wear a lot of hats in the film. Like I played Harold, one of the leads, the hypnotherapist. I also played a bunch of other characters, and you know, our main kind of monsters were like shadows. So within some digital stuff and me being on a green screen, you know, doing that stuff, I had to do a lot of different things. I had to do that. Also do the audio, be the sound guy. And, so when I wasn't behind the camera or holding the mic, you know, he's, you know, behind the camera and, you know, he's, you know, the first part of the movie, I'm in it for the most part, me and Amanda, Winston, who plays Kimberly on the lead in the movie. So I think when it came to that, it was kind of like, you know, it's pretty much like we all had different jobs to do, but for the most part, you know, I think it's an even scale. I give him more of the limelight of it because me personally, you know, I met him through looking at this poster, and then he had locations and he had actors established for the first part of the movie. And as we was going, you know, as we was progressing, because it took us 6 months to shoot everything. So as we was progressing, you know, I started getting my people to come out and I started finding locations for different things. So as everything was going, it was kind of evened out. So when you see the poster, you know, it says his name, but within like all the streaming information and whatnot, both our names are in there. So, you know, it was an even balance when it came to doing the direction and stuff like that. But we sat down and figured out what we wanted to do before we got on set. So that was helpful. But for the most part, I think when we were on set, we got along pretty good.
So did you do all the music for the film? Like, it goes to every genre I could think of. I mean, you had a beautiful industrial sound at the beginning, like just phenomenal. I was like, oh, I'm going to love this. And then I'm listening to it. I'm like, okay, we're not doing all this. We're going over here. We're doing some jazz. We're going to do this. I mean, did you do all this?
Man. Yeah.
That's impressive, man. That was like so many genres of music. I didn't even know where you were going next. I was kind of like, what's he going to give to me next? Like, because I was into the industrial. I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to love this film. Nope, that's the end of that. You've had enough. We're going to give everybody else something. So give me some ideas. Like, you were just throwing everything at me.
Yeah, it was pretty much, this is a low budget film. You know, we did every, you know, we used every resource we had. We learned on the fly. We tried to figure a lot of things out. You know, there are some things we're happy about. There's some things that we wish we could have done better and stuff like that. But, when it came, cause we had, I think, 46 pieces of music in the movie. Yeah. And I pretty much like a lot of the music and stuff like that is compiled of like between 10 and 15 years of me writing songs. And I'm not a perfectionist, but I had these pieces of music where I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I'm going to just put it out there and all this stuff. So as we was writing, and I love like being a musician, I love like having music dance with the visual. And as we was writing, because while we were still shooting, my engineer, who also did the sound mixer for the movie, John Magniscus, we call him Johnny Mac, because Magniscus is, it rolls weird off the tongue. So Johnny Mac, I've known him for 20 plus years. And he wanted to get involved with the movie, so he did all the mixing of the music, and he also contributed in some of the compositions and stuff like that. And majority of my friends are you know, artists, guitar players, drummers, you know, cello players and stuff like that. So I pretty much got all my friends to say, hey man, could you come by? Can you lay something down? Can you do this and that? So I compiled a bunch of different elements. Even my son, he's in the crazy, my 5-year-old. You know, I just pushed the mic on play, you know, record, and he started playing piano and started playing around and just took little snippets of whatever he did and cut it up and put it into the score. And a lot of the stuff I do, I'm very into sampling, so I use a lot of found sounds. So that intro of the music, when you hear it before it kind of pops up and you see the girl in Erica's eyes, when you hear this, that's my son when he was 6 months making all these weird noises in the back. We was in Florida and he was making these weird noises in the back of the car. So I got my phone out and recorded it. So I took that sound at the beginning. If you listen to it, It's pretty much his voice, and then I down-tuned it to make it sound deeper, and then I put, like, a little distortion in it. And then my buddy came over and played violin and stuff like that. So, yeah, it, I was the music supervisor. I brought all my buddies in. I mean, I threw everything out there because I look at it like this. We, you know, we didn't have a lot of money, but we put so much into this low-budget horror film. So when I saw movement, when I saw movement with the visuals, okay, that's a piece of music that can go here. That's a piece of music that can go here. So a lot of stuff was already in place, and then it was a lot of stuff I built sounds and music to based on the movement of the movie. So yeah, I think we did about, and this is the re-edited version. So I think it was originally about 48 pieces of music, and then it ended up being like 45 pieces of music.
Okay, we're going to get to the film now, just so everybody knows. I did watch the film. We weren't discussing the easy stuff. Well, obviously I did. Yeah. I talked about the music. Color to black and white. Why did you do that fade? Did you not want to have it all in color?
Are you talking about the beginning or that middle?
Yes, exactly at the beginning.
Oh, at the beginning? I think the one thing we wanted to do, I mean, as you watch the movie, the theme was the red eyes. The theme was the glow. It was like, you know, we had a lot of like awkward close-ups, you know, with how we, you know, did the cinematography and stuff like that. So I think my main thing for the black and white was just the focus on that red light. Like everything that was around just kind of, you know, that's in the background. So when everything was black and white, then that red light was just the only thing red. That was kind of my main focus. And then like a lot of influence from the whole hypnotherapy setup. We went to this show where this guy was hypnotizing people and stuff like that. So, you know, I got lucky, called me on stage. And when he called me on, and the thing about being hypnotized and all this stuff like that, I don't think they have these special powers. I think it's up to the person. It's up to the person to just let everything drop and let everything go and just kind of really stay focused. And them having that ability to make that happen. Sometimes it works for certain people, it doesn't work for other people. Me personally, I thought it worked because there was this light in the, like, you know, balcony area where he brought me up and he said, all right, focus on that red light. And when I was focused on that red light, I saw just black, just nothing. I didn't see the balcony. I saw just black. And then I just saw that red light. It just made me just tune into that. So that was kind of influenced based on that element of just like everything else around you doesn't matter. It's just about what's inside that red light. And then that was the, pretty much the whole thing, you know, of the movie, you know, just trying to stay focused and look through that light and see, you know, what's really inside it. So that was our artsy fartsy intro to the movie.
I do want to get into this later, but you brought it up. So let's go over the CGI. The red light, I presume, was a CGI effect.
At the beginning, that was actually a light.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because like it was. I mean, if you have you seen the movie Sin City?
Yes.
Yeah, so pretty much what I did, cause, my buddy Nick, he did all the hallway stuff that I'm assuming we'll talk about that, all the hallway stuff. And then a couple of my other buddies, Josh and, Eric, did some stuff. And I was forced to learn some special effects stuff too, cause I'm like, I have no money and I need to figure this stuff out. So I did all the eye stuff and all these other effects. But yeah, that was an actual red light. And pretty much what I did was, cause it was in, obviously it was originally in color. So pretty much what I did was I just met, you know, I just drew out the other elements and put it and made it black and white and then kept that red inside there. It's, I don't know how to technically explain it, but yeah, everything was in color, but I knew there was a certain way to just make that light red and then keep everything else black and white for that part. Okay.
What did you want to say about the hallway scene? Because I don't have any notes on what I was going to say about the hallway scene. So what would you like to say about it? Sorry.
Oh, no. Yeah, I mean,
I know what scene I think we're talking about, but I don't like to ruin films, so I kind of just go generally over stuff. So if you want to bring up the hallway, go ahead. I think I know what you're talking about.
Oh yeah, well the hallway was pretty much, the hallway scene is pretty much the significant element of the whole movie.
That's what I thought you wanted. I was going to talk about the end.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about. No,
you're talking about CGI. That beginning was just a real red light.
Okay.
This color and stuff to it.
So you do a lot of CGI at the end of the film, which is what you're referring to. How was that? How long did that take you? Did you go over it a few times? Did you have to play a lot?
That took, for me, not knowing how to do it and just going on YouTube and going on tutorials and watching movies. All of that took probably 7 months to do.
Everything. Oh my, wow. Yeah. I can believe it, 'cause that's a lot of work for one person.
Yeah, it was like six seconds of something took me 5 days to do.
I can believe
it. 6 seconds.
I can believe it. 'Cause you're learning as you go.
Yeah.
And I understand. I mean, you're telling me you don't know. And there's a heavy CGI throughout this film.
Yeah, anytime something
black shows up, that's a CGI effect. Red eyes is a CGI effect. I know that. And multiply that by how many times you have to do things.
Yeah.
And also show me sky colors, I presume, is a CGI effect.
Yeah. It was like one of the scenes towards the end, that was like we shot that during the day, and I just made it not look like what it originally looked like. So yes, it was a lot of crazy. Like I said, we threw everything in this movie that we could think of to be like, you know, all right, we're gonna do this, we're gonna do that, because we wanted, I don't think it would have been as CGI heavy originally if the location that we originally had would have happened. I think it would have been a lot more practical things that would have happened. But since we kind of got in, you know, we're independent film, that's what happens. I was just looking at the edit, and I was like, all right, we're just going to go just absurdly stupid right now. Just because that's just what we had to do. So.
Okay, I did have a question about a filter on the camera. So that doesn't happen. That's all the CGI and the filter. There's a scene that I thought you added a filter to your camera. So that never happens. That's just a CGI effect.
I'm trying to write my note.
I know. On C-Spell, on, see, this doesn't make, I wrote my notes, but I can't read it because I was reading. It must have been somebody speaking. Filter and camera in bedroom scene, I wrote, but that doesn't make sense. It's about halfway through the film, maybe in the last 30 minutes.
Bedroom scene.
That's what I wrote. Filter on camera, and I wrote bedroom scene, so I must have been mistaken. Don't worry about it. I'm an idiot.
Okay.
Oh, well, they're making love.
Two people in the bedroom?
Yes, two people. They go on the date, and then they make the kid. Kind of ruining things here. I'm trying not to.
Well, yeah, if you seen one of the trailers, it kind of.
Okay, good. Yeah. I don't watch trailers, so I'm not ruining anything. Okay.
Yeah.
Did you use a filter at any time is my question. Maybe I should.
As far as the overall movie, what we did, we shot with two DSLRs, so it was HD with a 4K. What I did was I added some 35 millimeter grain to it,
and gotcha.
Then I added it. Right.
Ah, yeah. That's so, what so, I was looking so, for.
Yeah. So when it looks, so if you're watching it, and it looks really grainy. That's what it's meant for. Watch The Shining or watch, especially two movies that I was inspired by as far as getting that kind of rugged look. The first Saw, which is to me one of the greatest horror films ever, and The Exorcist. Like The Exorcist was just, I mean, it was shot on film, but yeah, I wanted it to look a certain kind of way, you know, and a lot of things, you know, we was influenced by The Omen and Rosemary's Baby and Shiny and Exorcist or whatever. So I wanted that kind of late 70s, early 80s kind of feel. So we put a grain on there. We put this, it's called Halation. So if you really look at certain elements of the people, of the actors, the characters, they have to like this kind of glow halo around them, like a red halo. And I use this Gaussian blur to kind of blur. I didn't want to make it look so crisp and clean, because I know 4K is ridiculous how clean it is, but even HD still is too clean. So I used a blur to kind of give it the softness to the look. And at certain points, some people just look a little blurrier than others. But, and that was, you know, somebody might say, man, they ain't keep this in focus. Why is it so blurred? Because it was another element of, I mean, the movie was about focus, eyes. So when this person, you see this person kind of clear, and then you see this person, and they look kind of blurry from their point of view, they're looking at that person in blurry. From an audience point of view, they look blurry. But everything was about the focus. Everything was about, like, the scene when he's hypnotizing her and he put her in a sense of calm, you know. What happens when you close your eyes for a long period of time and you open them up? You're not going to get your focus full on. It's going to be a sense of blur once you get those muscles back into your eye sockets to, like, really see what's going on. So that was kind of one of the elements, and that was the style we was kind of going for the movie. So hopefully people get it. Or you'll say, man, this movie grainy, I guess. I'm like, yeah,
hit the point. That's what I was going for. I thought it was a filter or some guy. Perfect. We understood each other. Yeah. Awesome. Let's go over a couple locations. The lab location, it looks like a school to me. Or it could be just an industrial compound, like a cafeteria or something.
Oh, are you talking about at the beginning of the movie, right?
Yes.
Yes, that was actually a building. That was actually a building that we got. This guy Todd, he plays the janitor in the movie. He had a buddy who had a building. And he let us use the building. So it was actually the place we were in. It used to be a dentist used to rent that room out. So, one of the scenes, if you ever remember, one of the scenes where, Kimberly, the main character, Amanda Winston's character, when she's kind of sitting in the chair and it's all red in the room, that was a dentist. That was an old school dentist chair. It was in the room, and we was like, yo, bring this over here. We just had her sit down. I just kind of, like, had the camera held, and I just, like, let's just do it. I'm like, you know, we had a red light, and I was just like, I don't know what we're going to do with this, but that looks cool. Let's just shoot it. I think it was a bunch of old, like, dentist, like, tools and different things in that room. So, yeah. So it was just an open room, but the main thing about it was a dentist used to work in that room, so they had all kinds of different stuff in there. But we just moved some stuff around and just say, all right, cool. But yeah, they let us use it was like chop the director's edit, because this movie is originally 2.5 hours, so we had to chop it down. So in the original edit, we had another room that looked like a office. So we had a scene, we had a scene where a counselor was talking to Erica's parents, you know, Sean and Tiffany, played by Bobby Bozak and Stacy. Like, okay, yeah, so that was a scene, where it was a counselor talking to them about Erica and her issues and all this stuff like that. So, that was originally in the movie, but that'll be on the, you know, deleted scenes once we do a physical release or whatever. But, that was in that building too. So, the bulk of the movie in that area, we did a lot of that stuff in one building for that part. So,
okay, yeah. But the bar location can't be in that building, or is it?
No, the bar was actually down the street from that place. So we I know you live in Canada, but on this town, Waukegan, Illinois, we shot a lot of stuff over there. And the bar, actually Todd, his buddy, owns the bar. And then he asked, he was like, hey, we need a bar for this scene, and he let us use it like all day. And it was pretty funny because we got there at 8 o'clock. So we're like, okay, we can knock this out in like 5 hours. You know, people ain't gonna show up. It was already like 10 people there. It was like 8 o'clock in the morning. I was like, okay, well, I guess we gotta work our way through it. But for the most part, everybody was awesome. It was a good time. It's funny because when you talk about CGI, that scene was the most difficult scene I had to mess with of anything else in the movie. Because originally I wanted a bar, but I wanted something more rinky dink and just like kind of run down with like no sport. And I didn't really want a sports bar with all the like logos and sports teams and all that stuff. It's like, man, we have no budget. We can't be using this stuff. You know, somebody get in trouble. I mean, so far, everything's been fine. No one's sued us or anything. But that was the one thing I was kind of like, why did we pick this bar? Because it's just, you know, it was too much. It was too much going on with all the sports flags and posters and all that stuff. I was like, yeah. But I had to kind of move certain things around and move some stuff out the way to just kind of blur some things out just so it's not too sports bar-y, but it still is.
I do have more questions with the bar, but I just want to jump to the apartment. Whose apartment?
Okay. We used two apartments. Are you talking about with Kimberly?
Oh, give me both then. I didn't realize there were two apartments. I wasn't sure. Because one point you'll have it in where her dad lives, and then the other one's a different apartment. I thought maybe you were just shooting from a different angle.
Oh, it's three. Yeah, three. No, you know what's so funny, man? Like, we I think we had like 13 locations in this movie. So, yeah, we had three apartments. So the first apartment, when we went to the flashback with Kimberly and her boyfriend / fiance, husband, Jeremiah, those two are actually married. Jonah Winston and, Amanda Winston, they're actually married. So, and he's an actor as well. He's a theater actor. And with those two, that was awesome. Cause we shot all their stuff in one day. That's their apartment. So they let us use their apartment. It was actually Labor Day. They let us use their apartment. And, we was there like a regular work day, like a 9 to 5. And then, Larry, the father, that apartment was Bobby Bozak, the guy who played Sean, the father. That was his daughter's apartment. So she let us use her apartment for like 5 hours, and we was like, all right, cool. And then, Rich, Bill Russell who played Rich, the creepy neighbor. That was actually my friend, Lauren, her apartment. So yeah, so we used three different apartments for the move.
Okay, I want to go back to the bar because I have a couple of questions. Neville Punch in the class, is that a real drink?
No, I think one of the things that inspired us to doing that was we didn't want to hold in like a Miller Lite or something like that because we don't have the rights for all that stuff. So I came up with the idea. And it just popped in my head. I was like, make up a beer, call it Knuckle Punch.
Okay.
And Aaron designed a logo. I put the logo on the beer bottles. And she obviously consumed a lot of alcohol, a lot of Knuckle Punch beer, but it was all apple juice. And I don't even know how much apple juice she drank, but she drank a lot of apple juice
The main actor at the beginning, the black man, asked her a first date question. I put red flag. She should have left as far as I was concerned after that opening question.
What was the opening question?
I can't remember what it was, but I wrote down Fert Day question. He asked her a question. I put red flag. She should have laughed. So did that occur to you?
Is it at the bar?
At the bar, 100%, whatever that question was, I put red flag. I can't remember what it was, but I was like, why is she staying for this? So that's my question. What's her motivation to stay after that question? Because I thought it was offside. I wish I wrote it down.
I think I know what the question is. When Harold said, do you have any children?
It was, do you want children? Something like that. And I was like, that's a red flag.
Yeah, he said, do you have children? Because you said, not at the moment.
Yeah. And that was it. I'm like, that's got to be a red flag. How is this movie continuing? I wrote it down as that red flag. Why is she staying at the bar? So that's my question to you. What's her motivation for staying at the bar?
Well, it's funny because, like, the movie is such a mind. We can curse, right?
Absolutely.
So the movie's such a mind. So it's a lot of things that happens in this movie that's kind of absurd, but there's a lot of things that's happening within certain characters that's kind of making things a little bit different than what it should be in the real world. And I think, I played Harold. I mean, I got my glasses on, so I played the character Harold.
I know you do.
I think the one thing we talked about, we wanted their relationship to kind of be off.
Oh, then you achieved it. I will 100% to the viewer say you achieved that objective.
Yeah, Harold was just awkward anyway. Like he was, and one thing people, I don't think people notice, Harold, like at certain times he blinked really weird, like very tight, because he felt like if he really put his eyes really focused on someone without, you know, whatever, they're gonna see certain things that's gonna happen, because obviously he's possessed by a dark entity, known as the Sistron. But I think their relationship was kind of weird, but I think there was a sense of, Once he got her back to do the hypnotherapy session, I think that was the first time that there was a certain connection with them that kind of made things feel at ease, but I think something about what he was doing just kind of, I don't know. It was awkward and uncomfortable, but she still felt in some kind of awkward trance within the things he was saying or just how he was interacting with her or whatever. So, but yeah, that scene, I get a lot of comments about that scene because people like, you got any kids? You want any? But you know, to me, it was awkward, but on the other side of it, and do you want, I think the way he said it just made it like if he would have said, you got any kids? And she said, not at the present moment. And he's like, you interested in having children? You know, cause yeah, he's kind of a weirdo, but he's like, are you interested in having kids? But I think one of the things that made her feel comfortable when he said you wanted children because of her past of, you know, having miscarriages and, you know, the difficulties of things she went through. Oh, yeah, a lot of people. Actually, this one guy who did a review on our movie, and he was saying, he was like, you know, Harold and Kimberly. It was like awkward. It was an awkward situation, but it worked. And I was like, that's cool. I mean, that was the whole. I mean, my thing is, especially with a movie, what we were trying to convey I mean, I think some people would get it. Some people will be like, yeah, that's weird. But I don't know. You know, I look at all that stuff as subjective.
Hey, so what's up with Vincent Vega? What's the obsession?
Well, I'm a huge fan. You know, I'm a huge fan of Pulp Fiction. I'm a huge fan of Quentin Tarantino. So when we was like trying to, you know, when we was trying to break down like conversations that's happening in the bar and stuff like that, that movie kind of like popped in my head. So when I asked the question, when was the last time you cried while watching a movie? I took that from a hypnotherapy session. You know, the hypnotherapist was doing an interview, and he was talking about how movies can convey certain emotions and how you can be locked into something, and how that thing that you're looking at can bring out certain emotions, whether it makes you sad or make you happy or make you cry, make you, you know, whatever, angry or whatever. So I just took that in pretty simple, straightforward. I mean, we all watch something and have a certain reaction to it. So I took that element and then I added that into the movie where I was like, so, you know, when was the last time you cried while watching a movie? And then that just popped up, you know, where, you know, it's like, that's something different where it's like, she enjoyed Vincent Vega's character. He was awesome, and you know, he was fun and cool. I mean, yeah, he was a freaking drug addict, but you know, that movie is an interesting piece of work. You know, Pulp Fiction is a classic. So I remember as a kid watching that movie, and I'm like, you know, I love this movie, cool. I'm like, oh, John Travolta, man, he's awesome. And Tarantino does that anyway, where he just kind of, something comes out of nowhere, and you're like, fuck it. Like, that just happened. I didn't, like, he was in the movie the whole time, and the way that movie was shot, it was shot backwards and all this stuff. But all of a sudden, he opened up the door, and then he shoots him. And I'm just like, I was like, what the? I'm like, he dead? Like, just like that? That's crazy. Like, I felt some kind of way about it. I was like, man, that sucks. I like this character. He just got blasted, but... So I just took that element and had her, you know, say, yeah, you know, she loved that movie and she loved that character and she had some kind of emotion. So some kind of emotion when he passed, when he got shot or whatever and died or whatever. So I just took that from my experience. Not to say I was crying when he died, but I was like, oh man, that sucks. So, and the whole concept was like, you know, the emotion, like certain things, things you see and how it conveys a certain type of emotion. Yeah. Okay. So that's what they have, you know, and that's one of my favorite movies. So I just threw it in.
Lighting of the dream sequences. I find you light those differently than regular conversations or in the lab, or did you just play with CGI effects on the lights?
The dream, are you talking, so the dream sequence, so this is not in the hallway, but the dream sequence where Harold's rubbing on the whiteboard.
You got it. Okay. Yes, so you're with me. You're with me.
Yeah. So that was actually shot in my basement, and we grabbed a whole bunch of garbage bags and we cut them up and laid them flat. And what I did was when we laid them flat, I took like. From with the effects and stuff, I pretty much like traced those things. I traced the garbage bags within me standing there with the whiteboard and then her coming up. That what I did. I took like, I forgot what the special effect was, but we took these effects and we animated all the garbage bags. So I animated all the garbage bags within it. So every time I moved or she moved, I would take the pen tool and then just kind of move it around. So everything would just be all over us. So that scene, I don't can even tell you how long that took.
Yeah, but that sounds like a long time.
You see this kind of like acid. It's pretty much like an acid trip. You see all this kind of acid trip stuff moving within in the, you know, within him rubbing the whiteboard, and she's like coming up and talking to him and stuff like that. So that right there was like, yeah, we just took a bunch of black backdrops and then just animated it and make it look all slimy and just like warpy. And then we used some regular lights, and then we kind of put like this blue tint to it to make it look real cold. Cause you know, I'm like me and Amanda, like we're in the movie, like the first half of the movie is us. So colors on dark skin and connected with someone who's fair skin. It was an interesting journey getting that kind of locked in and in some way we possibly can with that. But with that scene, we did some moving around and did some natural colors, and then we just kind of put this blue tint into the mix. And then once things got real funky and weird, we just splashed all kinds of warpy colors, man, and just went silly with whatever we had available.
Okay. Did you give your lead actor directions for emotions? Because she does a lot of different emotions in the film. She doesn't seem to repeat a lot. Did you tell her to do different emotions, or that just came out naturally during the scene?
Yeah, I think what I love about Amanda is she's a pro. She's freaking awesome. She just, you know, this is what needs to happen. Let's make it work. As far as emotions, I could do the behind the scenes of her kind of, you know, doing all her emotions. I was looking at her while she was doing that stuff, making all kinds of weird faces and just trying to be as scary as I can. And just her just kind of being like, you know, like dramatic, you know, kind of like freaked out or whatever. And then I kind of had her be absurd with it, like more that kind of like, you know, Vincent Price, that old poster Vincent Price, like, you know, that kind of old school screen. So, and I mean, and you get some of the music elements, especially the score and that part of the movie, especially with the nightmare, you get this kind of crazy, like, screeching on violins. Cause I was into, like, I'm into that old school element of sound and texture, and yeah, so some of the stuff she was like freaked out, and some of the stuff she was kind of like, you know, very just really animated with her eyes, just kind of look, you know, that kind of absurdity of fear. Cause yeah, it's a dream. Dreams are absurd. It's all these things are just splashed into your mind for like a split second, and you wake up and like, what was all that? You know, so, it was more her seeing what I was doing. And her reacting, and just her, and just the beauty of the editing, just like, you know, put the camera on, just make all kinds of just faces, and then with the editing, it was so sporadic and cutty and, you know, glitchy and stuff. You know, me as an editor, I definitely like taking chances and being a little dramatic and silly and unorthodox with the stuff I do with it. Yeah, it's very unorthodox with it.
Okay, my last question about your film until we get to something different. Making the lead actor scream on screen, do you just dub that scream over and over and over again, or is it she does scream that many times?
We had her scream that many times. With posts, you can make things absurd. Mm-hmm. But we had her do like these harsh screams, and then like one of the screams, like when she's in the hallway, she's like, you know, that was her screaming, and then we pitched it up to make it loud, and then we put like an echo in the background. So,
okay, so
it was
a lot of different things.
Yeah. So we played with it. The scream when she was in the hospital room, that was her. Like that was in camera, microphone. A lot of the other stuff was her screams, and we took her screams and sampled it, and then just kind of absurd and made it absurd. Like I did, you know, with my son, I took his voice and then I just manipulated some different things. But yeah, So most majority of those screens were her, and we just, you know, exaggerated certain things here and there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now we're going to fun questions. You haven't heard one of my interviews. So that's your problem. All right. We're still going to do fun questions. Your favorite film besides Pulp Fiction and The Shining, because you mentioned both of those, you can't use them.
Man, favorite film. Favorite film. Honestly, I mean, one of my all-time favorite films is Beetlejuice. I love Tim Burton, and, you know, that film still stands. I saw it a couple of weeks ago. It still stands up.
Oh, I agree.
As how, and the CGI is absurd, but the cool thing about the CGI was it was clay. It was claymation. And I love claymation. I'm into puppets, and I love like animation like that. That's I would love to learn how to do stuff like that, but that's ridiculously tedious.
I'm going to ask you that. Will your next film involve a puppet?
My next film won't involve puppets, but I am writing a film that involves puppets.
Fair enough. Last fun question. What's your favorite place to visit?
What's my favorite place to visit? Ooh, man. I don't travel. One place I would like to visit, I don't really travel that much. I mean, me and my wife went to Cancun. That was fun. But a place that I would like to visit, I've been to Canada before. That was fun. One place I would like to visit is Iceland.
Fair enough.
But I mean, as far as like a restaurant or a town or...
Take it for what you want. It can be anything you want.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to visit Iceland. That's fun.
Fair enough.
I would love to visit Iceland if I had a chance.
Before I let you go, tell everyone where they can find your film and anything else you want them to know.
All right, so Evil Lurks is now streaming on Tubi TV. It's also streaming on Apple TV, Plex, and it's a couple of more, but I'm not going to. Check this out. It's on Tubi TV. It's free. You watch a couple of ads. It's an hour and 44 minutes, technically an hour and 38 minutes, if you can watch the credits if you can watch it or not. Psychological horror film. If you're into, like, mind, trippy type stuff, it's not a big gore fest. There's some moments here and there. So it's a low-budget independent film that we put a lot of time and work into. We're very proud of it. Here's the thing, if you watch it on Tubi, man, you're helping us out. You know, independent filmmakers, we don't have a lot to work with what we got. And, Evil Lurks. There you go.
Thank you for your time and have a great evening.
You too, man.